about. You gotta put it in perspective.
And we're live in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 3rd annual Stop Arthritis and Rheumatism Telethon, broadcasting live. Stay tuned for an amazing variety of top-notch performers. But right now, let's get things off to an energetic start.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
Well, I gotta tell you, Gumby, it might make you feel good that when I was 4, I had a Gumby and Pokey action figures. Unfortunately, my dog got to them.
Quiet! You're living a dream. You don't know who you are. Your face is a mask. No one knows you. You don't know yourself. You see your life in romantic terms, but it's a fantasy. You feed your mind with lies.
And now,
cross our fingers and hope for the best.
That's how I live my life. Just sort of half-assed and completely random.
Our feature presentation.
Is someone missing?
I thought
there used to be another guy.
If you mean the guy that starts the show and says, welcome to a all-new Kevin and Bean show for a Monday?
Mm-hmm.
He's not here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But we're here, right, Jensen?
Yep.
Yay.
Hey, Jensen. Hey, Allie. Hey, Chip.
Hi, Bean.
How was everybody's weekend?
Crazy. I mean, I slept and then I woke up and I'm like, I could sleep more. So I did. That was it.
Rain was pretty serious.
Awesome.
Not for people in
the mudslide areas, but for the rest of us.
I was going to ask you about the frame because I know it was very serious. Is it true, Jensen, our rap correspondent, that we almost lost Soulja Boy?
It did seem as if he had some car issues due to a mudslide. And
really?
I don't want to say it, but that would have been a true tragedy.
I didn't follow it maybe as closely as you did, but mm-hmm. I think he had to be rescued. I think he was one of those cars that kind of went over the cliff or something.
Well,
had to be rescued out by the first responders.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like there were some people questioning how dramatic it was after his story, but he did soldier on.
Well, like he does.
Yeah.
I'm going to file that one.
That must have helped, though, Allie, with your plan to sleep all weekend, just having this pitter-patter of the raindrops.
You know me. I can sleep when it's sunny and 104, but it was definitely a lovely, cuddly weekend for sure.
Yeah. Well, I will say that the solution to the Golden Globes, mm-hmm. I think, and this will be controversial, is to just have Jeff Bridges accept the award for everybody. Just keep sending him back up there. Whoever wins, just have him go up there and do the Bohemian Rhapsody speech. Have him go up there and do the Green Book speech. Just let him have it.
He does not lack for things to talk about.
No.
Yes.
That's for sure.
He is delightful.
He is.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with the movies, but he's taken a lot of direction from him. Okay. That's Bucky Fuller.
Oh, Bucky.
Oh, okay.
And Bucky... you know, he's most famous for the geodesic dome, but he made a great observation.
Okay, now let me...
Right.
He's most famous for the geodesic dome.
Obviously.
Was he saying that for the 1% of the people in the audience who didn't know Bucky's complete resume?
Well, they're handed it as they get in, his full resume.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
What a bizarre guy to bring up. Let's see where he's going with it.
About these ocean-going tankers.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that the engineers were particularly challenged by how to turn this thing. You know, they got this big rudder. It took too much energy to turn the rudder to turn the ship.
Now, if you're just tuning in either to the show or to the TV last night thinking you were going to see Jeff Bridges getting the Sesame DeMille Award and talking about acting, you're in for a surprise. Because he's talking about how to steer a ship.
Sure was.
Imagine sitting next to him on an airplane.
Oh, he is yapping the whole time.
The whole time.
For sure.
Yeah.
So they came up with a brilliant idea. Let's put a little rudder on the big rudder. The little rudder will turn the big rudder. The big rudder will turn the ship. That little rudder is called a trim tab.
Okay. Learning a little something now, the trim tab. All right. And it was also weird that at the Oscars, when the orchestra plays you off, they aggressively play you off. They cut your mic and play you off.
Yeah,
I mean, they
right.
keep a very tight timetable over there on the Oscars. Do you see how many people waved off
very
the playoff music?
I waved them off from my house, and it worked. It was insanity to me. You just have to move your arm like once or twice, and they're like, oh, Shari for playing.
And they just let you go as long as you want. And I feel like that's a bad policy for people who are just up there reading lists of names. But I think I'll allow it with Jeff Bridges because I need to know where this trim tab story is going.
Absolutely.
And Bucky made the analogy that that trim tab is an example of how the individual is connected to society and how we affect society.
He's still talking about acting or he's not talking about acting?
That was a long drive.
Not sure.
It really was.
Oh, boy.
And I think I like to think of myself as a trim tab, and all of us are.
By the way, I'm so sick of that cliche in accepted speeches. I like to think of myself as a trim tab.
It's always thank you, Jesus. Thank you to my agent. Oh, if you're up, kids, go back to sleep. And then I see myself as a trim tab.
I mean, seriously, can stars not think for themselves anymore?
Trim tabs. We may seem like we're not up to the task, but we are, man. We're alive. We can make a difference.
Okay, all right. He's bringing it home.
We can turn this ship in the way we want to go, man.
Man, he's always the dude.
Yeah, he's turning more and more into the dude as he gets older too.
Now, here's my question: are people applauding now because they are
recognizing the dude?
Yeah, because they're getting, he does have a point, or that they just think he's wrapping up and maybe this long national nightmare will soon be over.
I think anybody that wanted that to end needs a soul.
Is no friend of yours?
Yes.
All right, so we can, we are the trim tab.
Towards love, creating a healthy planet for all of us.
Okay, bro.
So I want to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press for tagging me. And I wanted to tag you all. You're all trim tabs. Boom. Tag, you're in.
I know the Golden Globes has a reputation as being the show where the alcohol flows freely, and the later in the night you get, the more freewheeling the speeches are. But I don't think he was drunk at all.
No, he was Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It was just Jeff Bridges and up, right?
Yeah. Love it. I can't imagine a universe where people want the award shows to go longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
they're so long already, but if mm-hmm. it's just him rambling,
I'll take it.
I'm fine with it.
I think we all agree that he might be the exception to the rule on actors who hog the spotlight. All right, before we tell you about today's show, Chip, you have a monkey update?
Two texts. One, just woke up. Two, 6:15. That's
okay.
It.
All right.
All right. Let's see what he's going to be missing on an all-new Kevin and Bean show, shall we?
So break out the tissues. Because you're going to want to masturbate to all of them.
Well, I don't know. That's a guarantee.
Yeah, seems a presumptuous.
Monday morning on the Kevin and Bean Show means great news. And I've kind of missed that feature. You know, we haven't done it since before the holiday break. So a lot of great things have been happening in the world. We'll fill you in coming up on K-Rock this morning. Our favorite author in the world, Brad Meltzer, will be here.
Love him.
He's wonderful. He has a new book out called The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. Which seems bad. Michael Schneider will be here from Hollywood Reporter?
Nope.
Variety?
Variety?
Yep.
IndieWire?
No longer.
No, not that one.
Okay, Variety then.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Talking Golden Globes, there's a lot of surprises on the program last night. Some real snubs and some real surprise wins, too. So we'll talk about that. And he always knows what's going on at the parties afterward, which is fun, too. The NFL Wild Card Weekend has happened. So my season is over. But, Chargers fans have a lot to be happy about, as do three other teams that won this weekend. So we'll break it down with Andrew from the NFL Network. Jensen, we're going to talk about something we were talking about off air last week.
Yes.
About twins.
It triplets in this particular story, but it involves a basketball team utilizing triplets to cheat their way into a win. And I hope you have thoughts, because I do.
I do, too. And I think that there's a lot of nonsense that can be had if you have an identical twin that you guys can sub in and out for various activities.
Yes. And we're going to want to hear about some of them. But I do want to put the preface that we don't want to hear about assault.
Yeah. No. Definitely no assault.
No assaults.
Yeah.
Pretty much we'll put that up top.
I think that's fair enough.
Okay.
Plus, Ali's got just a red-hot batch of what's happening. And we'll get started with... Hey, thanks so much for tuning into the world-famous K-Rock here this morning at 106.7 KROQ or through the radio.com app. Allie's here. Time for our first look at what's happening for a new week.
Well, let's talk about some of the winners from last night's Golden Globes. I think one of the big winners was everybody tweeting, what's the Kaminsky method? Because everybody on my timeline was tweeting that. And really, they kind of have a point.
Big time.
Have you guys watched it yet?
No.
I watched the trailer for it, and I thought, you know, I love Adam Arkin so much. Or is it Alan Arkin?
Which Alan one Arkin. It?
I love Alan Arkin so much. I love Michael Douglas. I'm going to check it out at some point and then just never did. Why, Jensen?
Because there's too much TV.
There you exactly. go. There you go. It's kind of like Grace and Frankie for dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's a great analogy.
It's just old dudes doing old dude
stuff.
But
it's a Chuck Lorre show.
Right.
And I wouldn't say that Chuck Lorre makes award-winning television more than he makes very popular television, which is true.
Sure.
So now I will give one episode a shot because I want to know why. But up against what it was up against, can't believe
shocker.
It won.
Yeah, right, for
can't
sure. believe it. All right, well, let's go through. Let's start off with television, the best drama series, The Americans. Which, after six seasons, was finally nominated and finally won.
Yeah.
What is happening? Okay. Best limited series or TV show was The Assassination of Gianni Versace.
And I don't think that surprised anyone.
No. It's very good.
For sure. Best musical or comedy series, The Kaminsky Method.
Okay. That shocked everyone.
Yes, it did.
I think we all expected Mrs. Maisel, right?
Yes, but I, in my heart, hoped Good Place, but yes.
Mm-hmm.
Best actor in a drama series, Richard Madden. Best actress in a TV drama, Sandra Oh. And can we just discuss her parents?
They really may have stole the whole show.
They really did. The joy and pride on their face, standing up, cheering for her. I had tears. It was wonderful. Michael Douglas won for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy, of course, for The Kaminsky Method. Rachel Brosnahan, Best Actress, Musical or Comedy. Best Supporting Actor in a Series or Made-for-TV Movie, Ben Whishaw. He's from Bodyguard, right?
Yes.
He is from A Very English Scandal.
A Very English Scandal.
Yes, man. See, guys,
can
I report back to you that there's too much TV?
I agree. Best actress in a limited series or made-for-TV movie, Patricia Arquette, which a lot of people were happy about, but a lot of people also thought that maybe Amy Adams should have won that one.
Mm-hmm.
Best actress in a supporting role in a series, limited series, or motion picture made-for-television, Patricia Clarkson. Holy God. Her in Sharp Objects. Okay.
She was phenomenal actor.
Yeah. Best actor in a limited series or made-for-TV movie, Darren Criss for Gianni Versace.
Who's so good in that.
Yes. Moving on to the movies. Best drama, Bohemian Rhapsody. Really?
Also, how does that win drama, but not musical? It makes no sense.
None of it makes sense. Because best musical or comedy went to Green Book, which, was it funny? Was that
not
movie really funny?
No, it's not a comedy in any way.
No. Best actor in a drama, Rami Malek. Yeah. Best actress in a drama, this shocked everyone because nobody knew The Wife was a movie, Glenn Close. Who? What?
No. What happened? It came as a screener. That was the only reason I knew. But people have been saying it's going to be either her or Gaga for the Oscar, but I can't imagine it not going to Gaga last night, especially with the foreign press loving their like shiny winners, so they get a lot of attention. It seemed like an easy slam dunk.
That was a shocker. I mean, look, Glenn Close is one of the greatest actresses of all time.
And has never won an Oscar, right?
And has never won an Oscar, right? She's been nominated like six or seven times. So it's not that she's not great, but there's so many factors that go into who ends up winning, you think.
Yeah.
Momentum and whatnot. It was just, I mean, no one had that in the office pool.
No. And if she ends up winning the Oscar for The Wife, it's like such a clear career win. You know what I mean? Like it's
more
for a body of work.
Right.
Best actress in a musical or comedy. How excited were you being for Olivia Colman?
And what a wonderful speech she gave.
Yeah.
I like that she thanked her bitches.
She sure did. She's hilarious.
When you thank your coworkers as your bitches, you're my people. Olivia Colman, right there. Christian Bale won for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy. Another great acceptance speech. He is off his rocker.
Yeah, another guy I wouldn't want to sit next to in an airplane.
Oh, he's just magic. Best Animated Motion Picture, Spider-Man.
Yay.
Into the Spider-Verse.
It felt like the most redeeming win for me.
And that came out 3 weeks ago, you guys.
Yeah, sure did.
It's already won a Golden Globe.
Best Screenplay went to Green Book, which a lot of people were like, wow, okay for that, too.
Here's the thing about Green Book. You guys haven't seen it, right?
I have.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yes.
Do you agree with the consensus that seems to be that the acting is incredible, Mahershala
yes.
and Viggo are both incredible, but that the script is a little by the numbers, a
yes.
little oversimplification?
But it's so that kind of Oscar win. I mean, I did not enjoy it. I mean, I enjoyed the acting, but mm-hmm. like you said, it's just, it's so heavy-handed. It's
right,
so
right.
obvious. It's driving Miss Daisy flipped. I mean, I could tell
right.
you, it's just, you know what it is. You go in, you're like, I know exactly how this movie's going to play out, and mm-hmm. then it does.
Right.
It's not a best picture.
Yeah,
or best screenplay, neither.
That was a real surprise.
Yeah.
You guys have real feelings.
Got hot takes.
There
and
you
what
go.
What I love about the hot takes and the opinions and the outrage, mm-hmm. and I'm guilty of all of those,
yeah.
is that it doesn't make a bit of difference
no.
who wins. It
no.
affects
Mm-mm.
none of us in any way ever.
Mm-mm. No.
Mm-mm. No. Best foreign language film, Roma. Best original Great. Song, of course, went to Lady Gaga, Mark Ronson. For Shallow, Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture, Mahershala Ali in Green Book, and Best Supporting Actress in a Motion Picture went to Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Could She Be More Lovely of a Human Being? I love her so very much.
And that
I'm
movie's
with,
great.
With you right there.
That movie's great. You love that one, Bean?
No, I haven't seen the movie yet. I just love Regina King in everything.
Yes.
I wish she could win an award for every role she's ever taken. She's that good. Even
I
the
feel
clip
like,
they showed last night, you could not take your eyes off her.
And I feel like every role lately that she's been in, she has been winning, which
yeah.
delights me to no
yeah.
end.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. By any chance, did you see my Twitter last night? Because I have a knack for texting somebody that I think I'm texting, but it isn't the last person that texted me, so I just wind up texting the wrong people constantly.
Okay.
It's a gift I have. Well, last night I did it. I tweeted, anyone else just send a text that said Alfonso Cuarón can get it to the wrong person? Also, what's the proper follow-up to my Postmate? Postmate had said running late, blah, 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 and I thought that was the second text I'd gotten,
sure.
so went right to the top and sent the one about the, you know, the guy that wrote Roma about he could get it, and it went to my Postmate.
Was there a response?
There wasn't, and he made no reference to it when he handed me the food, and I thought that was a nice way to go. Right
Five
there.
Stars, big tip.
Absolutely, absolutely. Some birthdays for you guys. Nicolas Cage, Lauren Cohen, Jeremy Renner, Aloe Black, Katie Couric, and David Caruso. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Right. The glasses.
Yeah, the glasses. Oh, yeah.
I'll have it for you next time.
Thank
I
you.
Hope so.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. This is the Kevin... Oh, sorry.
too
early?
Much, too soon. Yes, I think so. I think so.
My bad.
Hey, with all the rain this weekend, I know it bummed people out. Probably you, Kevin. Probably bummed out by the rain.
Yeah, I don't like rain.
Don't like rain, but imagine what it does for the skiers in the skiing season.
Oh, of course.
Imagine what Mountain High will be like when you win a 4-pack of Lyft tickets throughout the day today here on K-Rock. 9 a.m., we've got them for you. 4-pack of Lyft tickets to Mountain High. And then throughout the day at noon, 3, 6, and again at 9 p.m. Details at krock.com. All right, get it ready because now it's time for Great Nude.
When you wake up, boy.
Sounded like you said Great Nude. Just for the record.
Stop. Like, you didn't do it.
Right.
I didn't
do
the
S. I did Great New because I didn't hear the echo.
Oh, it was an echo.
It was there.
It was there. It was my. All right, one more time. Now it's time for Great News. Okay, now it wasn't there.
When you wake up, all you hear is bad news. So bad it makes you want to hit the snooze. Kevin and Bean can make that go away. It's time for Great News today.
Great news!
Allie.
We're looking at you, Allie.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought we were. You usually say, like, hey, we love to do these stories because everyone's.
These stories because everyone's bummed by watching the news. Yes. Did we forget our part?
I mean,
sorry.
A little bit.
Well, I felt like whoever. We're not good at this. I felt like whoever goes first is the one who does that.
Oh,
that's
okay.
never
thought.
Been the case.
Ever.
I've heard Allie do that explanation before. All right, let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
It's time for Great News.
Damn you, Dale. All right, we don't have time. All right.
All right. My great news has to do with an 11-year-old boy named Odvik. But here's why I'm doing this story. It's as much for what he did, which was amazing, as for his interviews that he has done with different news outlets, because the kid wants none of it. He doesn't want to be a hero. He does not want people in his face telling him he did a great thing. He's just really, he's kind of shy, but also he has these lines that just make me laugh so hard.
How old is he?
He's 11 years old. And here's what happened. He was at his house, I believe it's somewhere in Minnesota, and they had walked into the pool area, and there was a man at the bottom of the pool, what looked to be a grown man, about 170 pounds, and he was at the bottom of the pool, obviously drowning, couldn't swim. So there's about nine men standing around the pool. None of them can swim. And here's where he comes in.
At that moment, he was the only one at the pool who knew how to swim. But the victim was about 100 pounds heavier than Odvik.
And Mom told me to jump in. I said he's probably too heavy, but I jumped in anyway.
He grabbed the man's left hand, lifted him, and towed him to the edge.
And I gave him to some other dude.
Odvik's uncle performed CPR, and the man survived. A hero?
Eh.
Who's not itching to tell his friends about it.
Oh, the best part was at the end where he said he's not itching to tell his friends about it. And then he goes, I mean, they'll find out. Like, he was just so not into it at all.
Am I insane to think that it would be difficult to go out onto the street and find 10 people standing together, none of whom know how to swim? That shocks me.
It is shocking.
It's shocking. Also shocking anyone else didn't try, even if you can't swim.
Right. He was in the deep end of the pool, so they're not going to be able to get him if they can't swim.
But a little kid was so much braver than the 10 grown-ass men that were standing around.
Absolutely.
This kid's looking around going, come on!
None of you guys?
I'm 11.
I'm 70 pounds, if that. You want me to get this guy? So he had had some swimming lessons in the past, and he had seen in one of them that you could go down and grab the rings and bring them back up. So he's like, I just kind of channeled that. That's what I did. But my favorite part of another interview that I saw was that the man came the next day to their house to thank him, and it brought him a gift card just to say, you know, you really saved my life. To which this 11-year-old kid said, he said, thank you. And then I went to the other room because I'm not really interested in that grown-up talk. I love him so very much. So really, if you're going to be saved in St. Paul, Minnesota, hopefully this 11-year-old is around, not nine other dudes just standing there going, guess we lost him in the pool.
Because you don't have to thank the kid.
No.
He didn't want it.
He doesn't want your gift cards. He doesn't want your grown-up talk. He's just going to save lives. And that's my great news.
Mine comes, the name of the person is Sarah Cunningham. So far, she is an officiant for ceremonies in which couples' parents refuse to go to the wedding because their kids are gay. Still happening.
Of course.
Still happening.
Awful.
So they want to get married, and their mom says, you know what? Not coming to the wedding.
Can't endorse that. Can't support it. Won't be a part of it.
So this woman in Oklahoma City, who is 55 years old, she's an officiant. Like I said, she performs the ceremony. And she's seen so many of these weddings where the parents don't show up. And she's like, this is ridiculous. So she puts out on Facebook, I will step in for your mom. If you need somebody to walk you up the aisle, I'll be that person.
Oh, my.
And she's done it time after time after time because that's still happening, which is just, it's shocking to me that that's still happening.
Well, it is to me, too. And it's also a little bit of surprise that it makes it easier to have a stranger at your wedding. You're already sad that your mom's not there. Having her there doesn't make your mom be there. So I just think it would be a constant reminder that your mom's not there. I don't know, but people seem to enjoy her services, right?
So you're against my great news?
I'm not against it at all. I think if it does make people feel better, that's awesome. I'm just surprised that it works.
Mother, what if 11-year-old Odvik decided to walk?
Yeah, I'll walk, whatever.
Whatever. I mean, people find out it's cool.
She also got overwhelming response from people looking to stand in for parents. So there were parents all over the place that were like, you know what? If you have a wedding that you need a father or a mother in, I can, you know, I'll be there.
Wow.
That's cool.
I'll do that. That's very cool, I thought, too. This all came out of her son being gay, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she had a huge issue, like, I don't know what to do because... And she had the exact same struggle that they did. Mm-hmm. But she ended up getting through it and saying, you know what? I'll do it. You need a parent there. I'm not your parent, but I will be that person. She said, mm-hmm. I feel complete joy. I experience God and humanity to a much greater degree than I ever thought possible. It's my joy.
Hey, she's putting the focus on love instead of hate, and that almost always works.
And that's my great news.
And I'll close this edition of Great News with Alan Naiman, who recently passed away. He was one of these guys. He was 63 years old, never married, never had children, and was incredibly frugal. Every once in a while, you'll see a story in the news with a guy who dies, and you're kind of surprised to find out about the life his friends and family didn't even know he had. This guy had no family. But he delighted in not spending any money. Remember our former producer, Frank Murphy?
Sure. Is that who it is? Guy. Is that who this is?
It's not, no. He had some money to begin with. His dad had left him some money. He also was a very successful banker, but at one point he decided to give all that up because he wanted to dedicate his life to children. And he had three different jobs, working in foster children organizations, working in the Washington State Department of Children. He just loved kids, like I said, even though he never had them. He never spent any money, though. He said that it was like a game to him. He would brag about how he'd go a whole day out and didn't spend a single cent. Well, unfortunately, he got cancer and realized his time was winding down. So he started doing research on leaving money to charity, which he in fact did. When it turned out, he died and had $11 million to
wow.
give away.
Wow!
No one had any idea that he had that kind of money. $11 million. It went to organizations like the Pediatric Interim Care Center, which cares for medically fragile babies suffering from prenatal drug exposure. He gave some of his money to an organization called Child Haven, which is for foster children in vulnerable situations. Make-A-Wish, Father Flanagan's Boys Town, Treehouse, which is another foster care organization. He also gave some money to his parents' Catholic Church and the Disabled American Veterans, too.
Wow.
He left a will behind talking about how excited he was to think about how much good his money was going to do when the time came. But it's just one of those deals where people die and you just have no idea what they've been up to their whole lives. But isn't it amazing?
That is amazing.
He would spend his money that way and live so frugally too. I mean, he wore jeans from Costco. He bought t-shirts at the grocery store.
Grocery store has some good t-shirts.
He just saved every penny he could. And that's why when he died, it ended up being
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 6:54.
Hey, we're still doing Book Club Monday, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Brad Meltzer joins us. His latest book is amazing. It's called The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. That doesn't sound cool.
I don't need to read it. I lived it.
Talk to Brad about that coming up here on K-Rock. First, Allie's got What's Happening.
You guys heard about this new M. Night Shyamalan movie called Glass?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yes, it's the third of a trilogy, right?
Yeah, it's bringing together Unbreakable and Split.
Yep.
It looks really interesting, you guys.
Sure does.
But this is my favorite line that was also in an article. Perhaps this film's greatest twist will reveal that this is only the beginning. That's from an article. That's not from the studio putting it out, which I just thought that was really funny.
It could be on the poster.
It should be on the poster, should, yeah. Absolutely. It's starring some, you know, little names like Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis, James McAvoy, Sarah Paulson. No big whoop. Like I said, it's out January 18th in theaters, but how would you listening right now, like a pair of passes to the K-Rock advanced screening of Glass at Pacific's The Grove on January 15th. Let's
Do we need all of that?
I think we do
we
in
do.
This case.
Yeah. We do. And if you would like to call right now, kids, give a call right now, 1-800-520-1067, and we will take callers 10 through 14, and you guys are going to see the K-Rock advanced screening of Glass at Pacific's The Grove. Good luck to you. Anybody see any movies this weekend?
No.
I'm going to say I did not.
I didn't. Okay. I did watch The Tidying Up Show on Netflix.
I saw some of that last week.
I'm sorry?
Oh, man. It's so good. Maria Condon.
Is her name Tidying Up Show?
Marie Condon?
That sounds right.
The lady that said, get rid of your books?
Yeah. No, she likes books. Books are allowed. But she basically goes into people's houses and uses a method to tidy up your house.
Uh-huh.
And it's great.
And is that method just throwing everything out?
No, she has. I don't want to spoil it for you. Huh. Watch it. It's called Tidying Up.
I'm not watching anything called Tidying Up.
You got to see it. It might help you. It might save
you. It probably could. I watched it too, and I think most Americans could use her techniques to make their lives better.
I agree.
I really do, because most of us just have too much stuff and too much clutter.
Yes.
People were freaking out on Twitter because she said,
does it spark joy?
Take your books that don't spark joy.
Yes.
Books that you know you're not going to read that are just there.
Yeah.
Get rid of them. And people were losing their... How dare she tell me to get rid of my books? My books are my everything.
No, she basically says, take anything you own, anything from your possessions, hold it in your hands, and if it doesn't spark joy, get rid of it. If it sparks joy, keep it.
I need that more than anyone, probably.
Yeah,
I will tell you,
I'm not going to watch the show.
I will never fold T-shirts the same way again.
Agreed.
I'll tell you
what? Agreed. It's thirds and then rectangle. I know. Yeah. Listen, I watch the whole thing.
What's
I live
happening?
By it.
I don't know.
I'm not going to watch a TV show that tells me how to fold a shirt.
Kevin, guess what? You don't spark joy. Get out.
By the way, Kevin, before every encounter with the home, she gets to meet the house. She basically mind melds with the house. She gets on the floor and bows and becomes one with the residence before she begins to clean it.
Also, Bean, tell them what happens when you get rid of clothes.
What happens when you get rid of clothes?
You have to thank it.
Oh, you do have to thank it. Yeah, you have to thank
what?
It.
The house?
No, the clothes.
The clothes.
Yeah. Like, you served me well.
Yes.
Thank you for the memory.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wow.
It's pretty awesome, you guys. Again, her name is Marie Kondo.
She's great. Spark joy.
Oh, and she only speaks Japanese, too, Kevin. We forgot to mention that.
Great. Also, one other thing about her.
Are you guys making this up?
I feel like they are.
Right?
This is a bit.
She also wears the same top all the time. She's like The Simpsons, like Bart Simpson, how he always wears the same shirt.
Right.
She does that, too. Yeah.
Because it sparked the most joy?
No, I think it's just
the
her
only
brand.
One that sparked joy.
I think it's her brand.
Does she really not speak English? You're reading?
Yeah. She's translated.
Subtitles. Yeah. She has a translator,
Yeah.
All right, what's it called again?
Tidying Up.
Nope.
Good God, that sounds awful. It sounds awful.
Well, your house is going to be burned down then.
My house is lovely. Everything sparks joy. Well, if you did see movies this weekend, let me tell you, if you were in good company, because Aquaman led the box office for the third week in a row, bringing in $30.7 million, bringing that total up to $260 million. Escape Room came in second with $18 million, followed by Mary Poppins Returns, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and Bumblebee rounding out the top five right there. Pretty exciting, guys. Adam Levine has a lot of money, is what I'm gathering.
So he's not going to play the Super Bowl, and we're all happy.
This isn't about that. This is about Maroon 5 frontman Adam Levine purchasing Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner's former family home. It was never officially up on the market. The sale was done privately, but... he paid $32 million for that home.
Wow.
He's got a lot of money, is what I'm saying.
Let's give some love to Maroon 5.
Those words were said.
They sure were. 32 for a house.
That's crazy.
And he's about to have the worst month of his life, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah. Why? I think that when he does the Super Bowl, the internet is going to explode on Maroon 5. That's my feeling.
Even though they're going to be fine, by the way.
They're going to be what Maroon 5 does.
They're going to be confident.
It's going to be a meme. It's going to be a whole thing.
Hmm.
It's going to be like cool to bash them for a whole.
Yeah, but if you have all the models that he has in the $32 million house and the voice, do you care what the internet trolls say, honestly?
I don't know. I think when you have to, I mean, listen, he has a lot of money, but $32 million mortgage over time is still a lot of money. No matter who you are.
Right.
I'm just saying, he's going to want... It's a bad time to buy a big house like that. In my opinion. It's a hot take.
What if he paid cash?
Well, then I mean, he still has to furnish it.
Okay.
What if that house sparks a lot of joy?
Right.
Well, then he's got to keep it.
Okay.
But say thank you to all the clothes.
So weird. This whole thing, just none of it makes sense. Some birthdays for you. David Caruso.
Did you lower your sunglasses, Allie? I couldn't tell.
I had to. You have to. Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Katie Couric, Allo Black, Jeremy Renner, Lauren Cohan, and Nicolas Cage.
What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast! Ah! Out of my eyes! Ah! Ah! Ah!
nothing better.
How is that real?
Our friend Michael Schneider from IndieWire and Variety is going to be joining us in studio in about 15 minutes or so here on the Kevin Bean Show to talk about last night's incredibly boring Golden Globes. Thank God for Jeff Bridges, though.
Well,
due to renewing it up, right? He's the best. First, though, Book Club Monday on the program. Our good friend Brad Meltzer is on the line. He is a New York Times bestselling author over and over and over again. And this latest book that was released tomorrow will be no exception. The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, is one of the most fascinating stories you never heard about before Brad came into your life. Good morning, Mr. Meltzer. How are you? And Happy New Year, sir.
Oh, good to hear my family's voices. How are you guys doing?
We are good.
We're doing great, and I'm telling you, you kind of are blowing my mind with this book for so many reasons, and I guess I want to start with, you know, you hear the outline of history when you go to school and throughout the rest of your life, and you think you know what happened, and you kind of forget that these were real people, and the Revolutionary War, for instance, was so much more complicated than we remember now.
Of course. I mean, that's the thing is you're taught when you taught the American Revolution, you're taught, you know, we were this ragtag group of fighters here. We fought the British who came from over there. And then we, you know, held hands and we wished in big dreams and we won.
And that's it.
All right. And that's the end. And the end and the credits roll. And then there's an after credit scene. And because it's like a Marvel movie. And but the thing is it's just not that simple. It's just a legend and myth. It's one we love, but it's not true. And the reality was we hated each other. At New York City at the time, at the first battles of the Revolution here during when the British came, there were as many loyalists on the British side as there were on our side. And they were switching sides over and over from our side to their side because anytime they looked like they were winning, people want to be on the winning team. And it's in the midst of that that they hatch a secret plot to kill George Washington. And I was like, what? Right? And I found it nearly a decade ago in a footnote. I was like, is this real? Is this internet nonsense? And it was real. There was a secret plot to kill George Washington during the Revolutionary War in 1776. When George Washington found out about it, he built a gallows, gathered those responsible, hung one of the main conspirators in front of 20,000 people.
Wow.
At that point, the largest public execution in North American history, George Washington brought the hammer down, was like, don't mess with me. I'm going to be on the money one day. I'm George Washington.
Where do we go from there? So, all right. So George Washington, he's a general at this point. He is leading the revolution against the British. Not everybody was down with, I mean, it was kind of like Brexit today. This is a violent version of Brexit where you've got the stayers and the leavers who can't agree on what should happen. And their solution was, let's just kill the general and that'll kill the revolution. We can all be British forever.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's the governor of New York at the time who was, you know, loyal to the British, the mayor of New York. But here's the one that blew my mind, who was also in on it. George Washington had his own private bodyguards. What he did is he asked all of his different regiments for their top four men. He wanted what they call drilled men, which are the best in the, you know, the best fighters, the best of them all.
Right.
He narrowed it down to 50 men. They called them the general's guards, the commander's guards. But what they were eventually known as are the lifeguards, because they guarded, their main job was guarding George Washington's
when
life.
When he swam?
When he swam, exactly. That's where Baywatch also came from, this exact moment. But these lifeguards were the best of the best of us, and they were the ones who guarded George Washington's life. Four of them were the ones who turned on him.
Is that right?
And I don't care if you're the best general. I don't care if you're George Washington. I don't care if you're on the money. That is devastating. It's a devastating moment, and that's why George Washington, you know, builds that gallows and hangs one of them, because he's just like, seriously, this is it's a betrayal of the highest order to him.
How bad are you at espionage and the secret, we're going to kill you? How bad are you at it if the mayor's involved, the governor's involved, and your bodyguards? Just kill him. How tough was it?
Right. That's what I said. Why do you only kill one?
Seriously.
Like one person, there's all these people, and he knows who it is. But the crazy part of it is George Washington is just, you know, we like to think of George Washington as being perfect. This is where he starts. And we love, as I said, to tell that story of, you know, we all came together, but we hated each other. And there was a moment where all the guards, the regiments from Connecticut are meeting up with the ones from Massachusetts, are meeting from the Virginians, and a huge fight breaks out. They're in Harvard Yard at this point in Massachusetts. And a fight breaks out, and George Washington rides in on his horse, leaps off, grabs two of the guys from Massachusetts and Connecticut, holding them by the throats, and is basically like, don't kill each other. We're on the same team, man. He's trying to pull it together. If ever there were a metaphor for where we are today.
Yeah.
And that's what we kept looking at is like, you know, today we have a president who loves to drape himself in the flag and tell us how good he is for everyone. But there was no flag back then. There were no United States. George Washington helped build them by just holding it together by sheer will and realizing that it was better to be together than divided. And again, that's just what we need today. We need leaders like that again.
Why was it not successful?
It wasn't successful because George Washington was smart enough. The first thing he did is rather than take it personally and get all emotional, is he created, and this is the best title of all time for a secret organization. He creates a secret organization no one knows about. It's called the Committee on Conspiracies. That's like the best secret club name ever, right? I like to call the Committee on Conspiracies to order, and he puts John Jay, who eventually becomes the first Supreme Court justice, in charge of it. And what happens is they start ferreting out information. They start kicking in doors. They start interrogating people. It's actually we all love to think of the CIA is the precursor to that as the OSS, and the Secret Service, the precursor to that as the Pinkertons in the Civil War. But in reality, it's this small group, the Committee on Conspiracies, that's our first counterintelligence agency in history. The word counterintelligence doesn't exist then, but that's what they're doing. And you see, and I don't want to ruin the book, but when you read the first conspiracy, you'll see that what Josh mentioned I do is you get to see the birth of our entire counterintelligence movement. And to this day, the CIA has a room in its headquarters in Langley, Virginia, named after John Jay, who they call the father of counterintelligence.
No kidding.
We're talking to our friend Brad Meltzer here on the phone. The book is called The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. It's available everywhere where books are sold, starting tomorrow, online and in stores. One last question for me, Brad, and that is, we always talk about the lack of statesmen that we have today, the lack of people that we can really admire. That's what your other series of books is about, in fact. But were we just so incredibly lucky that there was a time in the world where people like George Washington, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson all existed at the same time? Was that just luck? And how come it was really never happened since then?
Yeah, I mean, my belief is we still have them here, but we just don't have. And now we're starting to see that need again. And I always feel like in a time of great crisis, and a time of great need is when the best heroes step forward. And I think it's why you're seeing people now. Look at, you know, the most recent election, and there are people you've never seen of any color that are suddenly elected, and they come forward. New people come forward. But to me, you need the need. And even for George Washington, here's the need for him. It's my favorite story in the book, is that one of the first battles of the book is the Battle of Brooklyn. And we like to think, again, that we, you know, we held hands, we came together, we won. We got our rear ends kicked. George Washington got out-generaled, we got out-fought. We didn't have the experience the British had. But here's what George Washington does in that moment. Is he could easily beat his chest like our current leaders and say, you know, look at me, and we're going to take out as many as we can, and we're going to go out in a blaze of glory. But instead, he does the best thing he always does. He adapts. And what he does is he plans a daring escape in the middle of the night. He commandeers all the boats on the East River, brings them in the middle of the night, and one by one, he puts all his men on the boats to escape. But he won't get on the boat until everyone else is on there first. And the men see this. They see that he's risking his life for them. And that's the moment, one of the first moments, where all of us who hate each other at the time start coming together. We get that leader who shows us that he's going to risk his life and do something for us. And I think, and that's a moment of great need. And I really hope, at least this is my idealistic side, that we will see someone step forward. I'm not sure it's going to be in politics anymore. I personally don't think politics is how you change the world anymore. But I know all of us, and I know, listen, I know your show, and I know you guys long enough. That's what you do every day, right? You try and put that message of goodness. I see Alan.
Oh, yeah, we're
Twitter
practically George Washington.
Right? So all of you are like George Washington. You just need better wigs.
Exactly. All right, Brad, we're up against the break. We got to go. But thank you so much for coming on to tell us about the book. It is so fascinating, you guys. You won't want to miss this. The kids will love it, too. The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington, available everywhere starting tomorrow. We'll talk to you again soon, my friend. Thank you for joining. Michael Snyder is the senior editor for Variety. We have been lucky enough to call him a friend for many, many years. We're always excited to have him in, but we've never asked this question before, Michael. Why do you insist on Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground as your entrance music?
I know.
Why do we always have to play that every time you come on?
I love that you guys ask one song to play you on, and it's got to be Marcy Playground. It's always got to be Marcy Playground.
You've said it for years.
Yes, exactly.
All right, last night, obviously, were the 76th Annual Golden Globe Awards. Let me start with a piece of tape, and then we'll start with talking about the host. It was Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh.
We are going to have some fun, give out some awards, and one lucky audience member will host the Oscars.
Is there a rivalry? Is the Golden Globes, I mean, is that something that you think they're happy about, that they can kind of make fun of the Oscars and the troubles they're going through finding a host this year?
I think so a little bit. You know, there's a friendly, I don't even know friendly, but there's a definite rivalry between all these different shows. So the fact that they were able to get hosts pretty effortlessly compared to the Oscars, which, you know, still, as of now, doesn't have a host, and I don't think will have a host.
No, I think we know the answer now. It's Jeff Bridges.
Right? I wish.
He's still giving his acceptance speech, by the way, backstage. So.
What is the impression I get from the publications around the country is that they were competent and pleasant and inoffensive.
I think that's the best you can do these days. I mean, put that on the poster. These shows are impossible, and they're getting worse and worse as people have plenty of options. They don't need to watch award shows if they don't want to, and most people don't anymore. So I don't know what you do to save these shows. More entertainment, perhaps, but then you got to give out these awards, and the show went long as it is because they added a brand new award, this Carol Burnett Award, which added more time to the show. Mm-hmm. So there's no good answer. So I think they did the best that they could.
I think they're caring about the TV audience is secondary. No, for all of these award shows.
I mean, they do care about the ratings because it does say something. And ultimately, you know, the license fee for these award shows depend on people actually watching. So it is going to come back if people continue to tune out. But I don't know necessarily what the answer is other than get rid of the awards like the Grammys, perhaps. But you can't do that with an acting show like this.
Yeah, the Grammys only give out, what, 9 or 10 over the course of the night.
Even that,
of performance. All right, speaking of performances, is this something that would be a possibility? They do have a best song category. Why not put some music on the show, some entertainment?
Yeah, well, let's make it longer.
But I'm saying people might be interested in seeing Lady Gaga sing on the show, you know?
Well, yeah, and the Oscars do that, and I think that helps the Oscars telecast somewhat. I think the problem also with the Golden Globes is they have both movie and TV awards. They have a lot of awards to give out in a limited number of time. So there's just no room to pack even more in beyond that.
And how often is there going to be a Lady Gaga up for an award to sing? That's going to be a draw every, you know, 8 years.
Yeah, yeah. So on the flip side, you might have some years where Marcy Playground shows up.
Sex and
Candy 2019. So
I know we've asked you this before, Michael, but with a few exceptions, one of which is Christian Bale that we'll play a clip from here in a second. With a few exceptions, actors get up there and read a boring list of names. I know they must have pre-production meetings with all the nominees where they say, look, we know that you have people that you are grateful to, but let's try to make the show entertaining. Try to do something that the people at home will care about.
Yeah, the problem
none of them do.
The problem with the actors is that they don't care about the ratings or who's watching. Mm-hmm. They only care about making sure that the studio's happy, that their reps are happy, that everyone they want to thank is thanks. So as much as they beg the winners to please say something, do something, they still need to, you know, give their thanks first and foremost. A couple of people have tried. You saw last night some people did try to have a message, but they're also a little nervous and they bungle at sometimes. And
I love it when they start to play them off, and then somebody has to make a decision at some point. All right, let's just stop playing them off and let them go.
Yeah, yeah. Peter Farrelly last night, I don't know if you saw, at one point he was like, nope, you are not playing me off. Yeah.
Peter Farrelly's went through a lot of duds to get to that moment.
Yeah. So some poor sap at the control switch is like, I guess we're going long. Yeah. Peter Farrelly said we're going long.
Here's Christian Bale, who won for his portrayal of Dick Cheney in the movie Vice, and I just assume this is another of his fake accents.
Oh, look at all of us. What a bunch of lucky buggers we are, right? To make a life out of doing something that we love, right? That's extraordinary. thank you for allowing me to be a part of that for so many years.
By the way, we'll play more in a moment, but Michael, wasn't it funny how many people on social media last night had no idea that Christian Bale was British? Really Welsh, but I mean, they were expecting, because I guess they've seen him play so many roles where he's an American that they assume he must be American, right?
Acting,
right.
Thank you to my beautiful wife, who told me less is more. Say less right now. She knows the dumb crap that can come out of my mouth at times. I can sink and ruin a perfectly good movie and a so-so career in one speech. So thank you for that advice, my love. I wouldn't be working without her. And thank you for our beautiful children, Banana and Burrito. You know, they've given me a love and a soul that I never thought possible.
Banana and Burrito.
Another highlight.
Yeah, by the way, Jensen, baby names.
Right? Right? Those aren't bad at all.
Not bad at all.
Burrito Bale. Yeah. It's pretty good.
We are going to take a quick break. Michael Schneider is here from Variety, and we're talking about the Golden Globes from last night. You have to agree with us that there were some head-scratching shockers when those envelopes were open last night.
Always, and especially this year, a ton of real strange choices.
Yeah, there's nobody who aced their office pool this year.
Not at all. But that's what's great about the Globes, actually, is it is so unpredictable, and they are just a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're goddamn foreigners, that's why. More with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Michael Schneider in our studio here on K-Rock. He is the senior editor of Variety, where you can find tons of coverage on last night's 76th Annual Golden Globe Awards. All right, we talked a lot about the show, the hosts, the speeches. Now let's talk about the awards a little bit. And maybe you could just give a background for folks who don't know who the people are who vote for the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I think people forget it's less than 90 people who vote for this. So it's just members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, so really small group. So, you know, if a couple of them are swayed by, you know, a press conference or a moment that they had with a certain actress or actor, then that could swing the vote their way. And that's why you get a lot of weird choices and a lot of weird winners. But that's also, I think, kind of what makes the Globes interesting and at least different from the other award shows.
But how did it become so important if it's only 90 people choosing?
I think part of it is the timing in the awards season.
Early, yeah.
Yeah, it's a chance to sort of promote a movie before they even go with nominations for the Oscars. It also ended up on NBC, so NBC managed to make it a big telecast, so time of year. A couple of things that sort of turned the Globes into something that's bigger than what it probably should be.
Yeah, it's definitely not a precursor for the Oscars, because there's no way in a million years, right, that Green Book or Bohemian Rhapsody win the Best Picture Oscar, is there?
I mean, they're in the conversation, so to that degree, they are part of the awards cycle. But yeah, I think even though Star is Born did not win much of anything other than Shallow last night, it's still in the hunt for the big Oscar. It could still very well win the big prize, even though it came up pretty empty at
the
Globes.
Can you explain why, because I still can't figure it out, why is Bohemian Rhapsody a drama, but Green Book is a musical or comedy?
Yeah, it's kind of archaic how they decide it. I think a lot of it is up to the people submitting their films. So if they decide that we're more a drama, you could argue that Bohemian Rhapsody is a drama because they don't break out into song to forward the narration. It's
sure.
Just, you know, the Queen body of work.
Do they sometimes decide that based on, hey, this category has a better chance of us winning?
Right. Yeah, it's all strategy. That's true with all these award shows. You enter yourself in the category that you think you have the best shot. Green Book in comedy or musical, that did seem very strange to me. Star is Born also in the drama category instead of music. So
yeah.
it kind of makes a little bit of a mockery of these categories. But, then again, it's all a wash
at
this point.
It's a bit of a power move, I think, for them, because now Bohemian Rhapsody, even in my mind, I'm like, well, I guess it could be up for Best Picture because it's seen as a drama. If it was in musical and comedy, those are always kind of pushed off when it comes to Oscar time.
Right, because comedies... they have a longer shot at actually getting any sort of nomination at the Oscars, so you want to be seen as a drama.
Yeah,
and now Bohemian Rhapsody definitely upped its game, and it's now much more contender than it was before.
Is it?
I mean, that was the shock of the night.
Is that the worst reviewed Best Picture winner?
It could be.
It's like a 60 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it did not get great reviews. I thought the music was great. Rami Malek was great. But the film itself, could have used something.
Huge,
like a story.
Box office.
Could have used a story. But that's just me.
Whatever.
Go fish.
But Freddie Mercury wasn't interesting. So how could they come up with a story?
Exactly.
All right, we mentioned those two movies that were surprise winners. Now let's get into the Kaminsky Method, which had to have been the number one Google search last night, is what the hell is the Kaminsky Method, right?
Yeah, that to me, though, is a typical HFPA Golden Globes winner. It's got Michael Douglas at the heart of it, and he's this classic actor who, the voters have loved for years. It's a Netflix show. Ultimately, in hindsight, it made total sense that they were going to go for
that. Does the Hollywood Foreign Press like the idea that people are sitting on the couch going, what?
I think they do, actually, right? a little bit. They kind of want to be kingmakers. Mm-hmm. So that's why it was kind of interesting that they ended up giving the award to the Americans, which was a more traditional pick. In some ways, very anti what the Globes usually does. So that's why it's kind of all over the map what they did last night.
The foreign press also likes when big stars come to their events, like a Michael Douglas with Catherine Zeta-Jones. That, to them, is a win in itself.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why it was a little surprising that Lady Gaga, by the way, I can't say Lady Gaga looking at you without thinking.
Right?
It's pretty bad. I won't do it.
but why Lady Gaga didn't win was a little bit of a surprise,
yeah,
because
they
love them some stars.
Yeah.
So that was a shock.
These are the shows that the Kaminsky Method beat: Barry, The Good Place, Kidding, and Mrs. Maisel. There's no world where it's better than those shows. I can't imagine, and I'm going to say, because I haven't watched, like 95% of the world, I haven't watched Kaminsky Method. It just seems like such in my opinion, it seems as if Netflix may have maybe spent a little more money talking to the foreign press.
That always could be a part of it. It's a good show. It's a decent show. You know, Chuck Lorre is the creator of it. But nonetheless, yeah, you're right. I mean, on there, I would have loved to have seen Good Place.
Me too.
Can they be swayed? This is one of those.
Used to
take them out to lunch and you wine them and dine them, and then they would give you an award, right?
I think it always helps to have access to the talent. They do love sitting down and talking to the producers and directors, and I think that helps because once they spend some time with them, they kind of feel a little better about that show or that film. So, but I think that's true with everyone. I think that's true with most critics. They want to learn more about these shows, so it helps when you actually talk to the creators and get an idea of what they were going for.
What do you hear from the party circuit last night after the Golden Globes, Michael?
Well, as I was telling you off mic, my hot goss was Tay-Tay eating some pizza at the Fox party, Bean. That was all for you.
That's not hot goss, by the way. So a human ate is what you're telling me. That's your break.
Exactly.
I'm going to speak for Jensen here and ask this question. Why no tidying up with Marie Kondo on the Golden Globes? Where was the nomination for that show?
I'll tell you one thing. It didn't spark joy for me.
But I watched that show this weekend too, just
we
like
all
you
did.
Guys. How you fold your shirts and you do it vertically.
That's revolutionary.
I don't have enough time in my day to
Same.
Do all that. But by the way, all my stuff, and I've got a lot of stuff at home. I should show you. But you have DVDs. I have TV guides going back to 1953.
I did your podcast once, and you came in with a promo because I did it with Method Man. You had a promo item from Red and Meth, the Fox show.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, that sparks joy. All of my cheesy swag from all these bad TV shows. My Shasta McNasty hat.
She would come to your house and you would not get rid of a thing.
I would just say, you know what?
I don't need you.
You know what doesn't spark joy? Marie Kondo. You are leaving my house.
Boo.
And I'm keeping my stuff.
Boo. Your house does not have any blessings.
All right. What's going on Variety.com today for our listeners who want to keep up?
So,
aftermath of the Golden Globes.
Well, we do have tons of party coverage. We do have a lot of analysis, recaps. What does this mean for the Oscar race and a lot more? So,
Darren Criss ate a dumpling.
Check out Variety.com.
Sandra Oh had a Shirley Temple. It's all there.
It was delicious. By the way, Lauren Michaels did have what looked like to be a Shirley Temple.
There you go.
Hot coverage, hot goss. Variety.com.
All right. Well, we don't have time to play you out with Marcy Playground, so let's assume we did. Michael, always a pleasure. Sure. Get some sleep later today. Thanks for stopping by. 106.7
K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 7:52.
There was more than just the Golden Globes going on this weekend. It was the NFL Wild Card Weekend. We'll recap it, break it down for you with our friend Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network coming up just after 8. First, Allie's got what's happening here on this Monday.
Well, Bean, I know you were very busy this weekend watching something called Tidying Up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Did
How
you...
to fold your shirts.
I mean, did you get to see any of the Surviving R. Kelly docuseries?
I did not. I have the entire thing recorded, and I'm looking forward to it. I've heard nothing but rave reviews about it, and I've heard people ask, like, probably the story you're going to do, why are people still listening to R. Kelly's music?
Why are people still listening to it? How is he still signed at RCA? How are you even thinking about putting on a concert with this guy? It is something, if you didn't see it, it is 6 parts, but it started on Thursday night, so they did 2 a night. So Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And it just details from start to finish decades of abuse
How
of
did
underage
it take
girls.
This long? It, to finally make any kind of difference with him.
Well,
it, and
number
it
one,
still
it
hasn't.
It hasn't.
It hasn't at all. And, I mean, there had been stories about him forever. And then it was probably within the last 5 years that there was a specific writer at Rolling Stone and other ones that had been chronicling this forever and finally started getting some traction.
Yeah, we had him on a couple of times talking about it, and it's just like become his mission because it's such an injustice that this guy's not behind bars.
Well, there's stories right now that he has women captive at his house. Like, it's not like this isn't necessarily something that's passive.
Yeah, this is the definition of sex trafficking, what he is doing. Allegedly. But when I say allegedly, you have parents on this show sobbing because they cannot get a hold of their daughters who have been brainwashed by this man. It is stunning television. It is devastating to see these women that did get out just baring their souls and saying, listen, we've got to get this guy. It's insane to me. It's a lot. And one of the only big stars, really, to speak out about it and who's involved in the docuseries was John Legend. And a lot of people were saying, thank you so much for even appearing in this. So he tweeted, to everyone telling me how courageous I am for appearing in the doc, it didn't feel risky at all. I believe these women and don't give a F about protecting a serial child rapist. Easy decision.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, coming out against R. Kelly has been a very odd, no one does it really.
Yeah,
and
it's
I think
very
in the
bizarre.
Next
why?
The next few, I don't, I really haven't understood.
Yeah, because it seems like he's saying it's a simple choice.
Yeah, and Chance the Rapper has had a bit of an issue this last week because he did a song with R. Kelly in the last 2 years, like way too late in the game. And he this week announced he is ashamed of doing the song and regrets it.
He had done an interview with a woman that is in the documentary a ton. I don't understand his wording of it.
He says it's out of context. But.
Well, and they showed it in the documentary. It's exactly what he said. But he said, I didn't believe them because they were young black girls.
And I think what he's saying is that the sentence or the paragraph before that is he was saying, in society, we do tend to take black women's word at a lesser value.
Right.
And I did that myself.
Yeah,
he did have a bit of a setup for that.
He does admit that it was a huge mistake as well. I mean, then there's Lady Gaga. There's Jay-Z. There are people that have worked with him since we've known that all of these horrible things are in his past. It's just
not only
shocking.
Can I not enjoy the song Trapped in the Closet now, I'm skeeved out by the title.
Yeah. Oh, listen, Age is Just a Number is a song he worked on.
Yeah,
I mean, you could go through each single catalog and freak out over what's been going on. The good news, silver lining here, and I know it's going to sound bad at first, streams are up 16% of R. Kelly music this week.
Unbelievable.
The silver lining, the good news, he doesn't own his publishing.
So that's
right. Yeah, he doesn't own it.
Yeah.
So that's good news.
And he wouldn't know. This is a big part of the documentary as well. He cannot read. He needs people to do things for him. So when his ex-wife was saying, who's making all of these, you know, these flight arrangements? Who's arranging for all these people? He has this team of people, complicit people that are aiding in his disgusting behavior, and all of them need to be taken down at the same time. It is just, it is a lot to watch, but it
and
is
stop
also...
Stop loving Ignition, the remix. Stop loving it now.
And it begs the question that we've had this conversation on the show a ton of times. Can you separate the artists from the art? And I can't. And I've been very clear about that. And I think when you say you can, you're helping these men flourish. When you say I can still listen to him and I can still, you know, I'm not going to go to his concert, but you're still listening to him. You're still a part of it. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
It is just gross. But definitely worth a watch is all I'm going to say. I think something might come of this. I really, really
do. It's incredible that nothing has come of this.
There is video that they showed during his during the lawsuit against him of child pornography. He's in the video, and I won't say what he's doing, but it is despicable besides the fact that she was a 14-year-old child.
Yep.
And it seemed unsanitary.
Yes, we'll say unsanitary.
And his goddaughter, right?
His goddaughter and the bass player for him, his daughter, who still plays with him. The whole thing is so messed up on so many levels, but you are literally seeing that in a courtroom, and you're still saying, not guilty. What does it take?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, if R. Kelly has followed through with his threat to sue everybody involved in this series...
And I hope he does.
I think there'll be some stuff.
He doesn't want to be...
Yeah, Discovery would be a real bitch.
It'd be tough for him, yeah.
All right, well, that was an uplifting.
Good time.
What's happening for you?
Happy story for Monday.
All right. Hey, some birthdays for you. Jeremy Renner, Aloe Black, Katie Couric, David Caruso.
Oh, you want it again?
Come on, every time.
Come on.
All right, say it again.
David Caruso. And a man that just has issues with bees. Nicolas Cage.
What is it? What is that? Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! I love my eyes! My eyes! Ah! Ah!
Nicolas Cage had, at one time, three homes in New Orleans, lost them all to tax struggles, to the IRS, took them all away. But he does still have his $1.5 million tomb in a cemetery in New Orleans.
I visited it.
Where he plans to be buried.
I visited it. It's it looks like it's like a little baby Luxor. It's like
it's a pyramid. $1.5 million on a tomb. I wonder how he ran into money problems.
Is Chris Angel doing a show there?
Yeah, it's crazy. They're actually Pacquiao's fighting there next month.
Oh, good.
Come on, a little effort. Come on.
It did sound like they were really tired that day.
They just lost interest in the last 30 seconds of that song.
It's the world famous K-Rock. It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's 8:05.
So for months and months and months, Andrew Siciliano has been the busiest man on TV doing the Red Zone on DirecTV. Let's find out how he spent his first Sunday off yesterday. Hey, Andrew. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Happy New Year. I don't know how you guys do it every week.
Do what?
Sit on your ass for 7 hours and watch football.
It's the best thing ever. What are you talking about?
It's so easy.
It's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But, like, the lethargy, the...
Right.
The I just feel like a sloth.
That's
like,
what drives us.
Get up.
That's the point.
I mean, you could stretch, Andrew.
I'm moving the whole time during the show. I'm screaming and I'm yelling and I'm drinking coffee and I'm pacing and I'm getting mad at people for silly things that by the end of the show, I'm like, why did I lose my cool? And like yesterday, I did get up and go across the street to the grocery store at between the two games.
Oh, you're a crazy man.
I got right back on the couch.
Yeah. Okay. What was your peeing schedule like yesterday, Andrew, when you had the ability to pee whenever you wanted?
We need that question every time.
I went every commercial.
Okay, good for you.
Whether you had to or not.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Exactly. It's like you have this luxury, you may as well use it.
Exactly. I don't know where to even start on this awesome wild card.
You started in the bathroom.
Okay, gotcha.
But why don't we go ahead and start with the double doink? Here's the audio of what happened with time running out at the very end of the Eagles-Bears game. If the Bears make this field goal, they win it. Let's find out what happened.
43-yard attempt from the right hash mark. And, oh, he hits the upright again. That's impossible.
Did this hit the upright and the crossbar?
Bottom line, it doesn't go through. Upright, it looks like it bounced off the crossbar as well.
Oh, my goodness. The Bears' season's going to end on a double doink.
Oh, that's crazy.
Why does Cody Parkey hit the upright so often, Andrew? Way more than any other kicker.
Do you know how hard that is to do consistently?
Yeah. You can make a competition out of that with kickers and say, try to hit the upright, and they wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, and you couldn't do it. He has now done it 6 times this year. There's 2 ways to look at this. Number one is that, Cody Parkey was a stand-up guy after the game. He stood in front of his locker. He answered all the questions. He said the right things, so much so that even Kobe tweeted at him, by like, hey, man, good for you. Much respect. I'm an athlete. But, you know, go back to the lab and keep working at it. But good for you for owning it. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side of it, which is he kept the Bears out of advancing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's a kick he should make. And it's a kick he is paid to make, compensated well. Look, this has been an issue the entire year for Cody Parkey. Not only did he hit the upright a lot, he just flat out missed a lot to the point where mid-season the Bears would take him to the stadium. They practice like 40 miles away. They would take him to the stadium during the week so that he could kick and get used to the stadium. It became such a big news story, I'm not making this up, that local Chicago news helicopters would fly over the stadium on Thursdays to shoot pictures of him kicking in the stadium.
That's insane.
And so the Bears banned the news helicopters.
So they knew they knew it's risky
they
to
knew
go with this guy.
Was, yeah. An issue. And but now here's the other thing. The kick did get tipped. Now you need the Zapruder film to see it.
Right.
But it emerged after the game
that helps.
Someone got a fingernail on it. But the line held up well. It got blocked or got tipped because he hit a low ball. He missed it. They should win. And if you want to hear a crazy call, I just tweeted it. I should have sent it to you, but I just woke up, as you can hear by the sound of my voice. The Spanish Philadelphia broadcast.
That is funny.
He is unbleaking believable. Where the guy keeps yelling, "No señor,
no señor, no señor, no señor,"
and then he starts singing "Chicago, Chicago" to mock the city, and then yells in Spanish, "We're going to New Orleans."
Did you see that Philadelphia Eagles fans have been Venmoing money to Cody Parkey?
I mean, he's just being jerks.
I know, like, I know, but it's funny.
Like, see, but there's a backstory here. So last year, when Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals threw that amazing touchdown pass to Tyler Boyd with like 20 seconds left, week 17, the Bengals beat the Ravens, and the Ravens were about to win and go to the playoffs.
Right.
But by this miracle touchdown, the Buffalo Bills got in the playoffs for the first time since, no joke, the 90s. So all the Buffalo fans went to Andy Dalton's charitable foundation.
That's right.
Like a good cause, and they raised $100,000.
Wow,
went,
that's right.
Here is our civic thank you to you. Now, I don't know the details of this, but this just sounds like a bunch of fans being jerks.
It does. I'm sure it does, yeah. All right, you mentioned the Ravens. That's a great transition. You were frustrated, like a lot of people watching that game yesterday, saying, look, we know that Lamar Jackson is your guy, but he is not getting the job done today. Pull him. Bring Flacco back into the game. Why wasn't that decision made?
It can't really be understood, to be honest with you. Now, you have to realize that the backdrop here is that Joe Flacco had, if Lamar Jackson kept playing well, played in his final game as a Raven. The coach, the organization, everyone knows this is it. They're not going to pay him the whatever he's owed next year. He's going to go somewhere else. The coach's contract is also he's heading into a lame duck year. He says he's going to be back. The team says he's going to be back, but there are teams that want to send draft picks and trade for him. The idea of him putting Joe Flacco in at the end just seemed crazy on a number of instances,
right,
in terms of the organization.
Right, but what if they win?
Here and now.
But what if they win?
What
is
if
a great
they
question,
win, though?
You had to do it. I mean, but here's what's even nuttier. They got the ball back with 45 seconds left, and every Charger fan thought they were going to blow it.
Yeah.
So he still somehow found a way, but I'm with you. I was saying you got to put Flacco in. You got to give this team a chance. And, I made the analogy, and a lot of people hated it, that if it's game one of the World Series and Clayton Kershaw is getting his brains bashed in, he's given up six runs in the first, you pull him and you live to fight another day. Clayton Kershaw is not going to be mentally scarred next season. He's a big boy. Now, Lamar Jackson's only 21 years old, but there's this thought in football that you can't do that to a quarterback, especially a young one, because you ruin his psyche. And then everyone laughed at me. And then Joe Thomas, the soon-to-be Hall of Fame offensive lineman, tweeted, "It's like baseball. He's a pitcher. Get him out of there."
Yeah. Hey, just going forward, since it's L.A., do you like what you saw from the Chargers?
I mean, the Chargers get all the credit in the world for going on the road for an early kickoff and beating a team that had been red hot. They had the clear advantage. And to answer your question, yes, I like what I see. They had the clear advantage of playing them already once earlier, and they had a great game plan. They played seven defensive backs. They played four defensive linemen, and they played seven corners and safeties, and the Ravens had no answer. You never see that.
All right, let's.
Can I ask you a question, Andrew?
You sound flummoxed.
I'm flummoxed as to why the Chargers were where in what city were they in?
They're in Baltimore.
Baltimore. Yeah. That's
yes,
right.
It's flummoxed, not flummoxed. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, so they just played there instead of staying on the East Coast to play the Patriots on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Why are they flying across the country back here instead of just staying there, getting used to the weather? They haven't played in any weather so far this year. What are they doing?
It's a great question. Only they can answer that. You don't often see teams stay on the road for playoff games, although it certainly has been done. They think that they are better served to get out of there quickly as possible, get back here. They got back late last night, and then fly on Friday morning. Only they can answer that. It's a crazy back and forth. I don't know what the weather is on the East Coast right now, but I do know that the early forecast for Boston is 3 to 5 inches of snow for that game.
Yeah, that's pretty different weather than
I think Coach
had.
Alley is right.
It just doesn't make sense.
You should. We should get Anthony Lynn on the line and ask him, what the heck are you doing? Some teams do it because they don't want to pay the expense of staying on the road. I honestly don't know their answer, but in this case, it would make a lot of sense. Some coaches don't want to jinx it. Like, we don't want to have to find a facility, as crazy as that sounds, and then find out, and then we lose the game. We made all this preparation to stay. I know that sounds nutty.
I have a question. Why didn't the Seahawks just hand the ball to Marshawn?
Great question, Kevin.
I thought your question would be, why wouldn't they throw the ball more? I mean,
Thank you.
Just the reverse of the Super Bowl. They came out and they ran and ran and ran and ran all year. Their percentages actually weren't any different. They got to where they were because they ran the ball all the time.
They won 10 games running the ball as well as anybody in the league. And then yesterday when it didn't work Saturday when it didn't work because the Cowboys shut them down, they waited until the three-quarters of the way through the fourth quarter to go, hey, you know what? We actually have a pretty good quarterback who can throw. Let's try that.
Yeah. We should try throwing on something other than fourth down.
I was infuriated. Seahawks fans have a right to be furious at the play calling on that game, right?
What about Pete Carroll? And was he chewing gum at all? Any shots of that?
He was chewing gum, and he was moving really, really fast for a guy his age. and it's still like the Ravens game. Came down to an onside kick, which onside kicks with the new rules this year, no one gets an onside kick. There have only been four successfully done all year, but they have the Aussie punter because their 64-year-old kicker blew a hammy.
Yep, and they had no kicker for the end of the game, right?
It just didn't. You know, I'm a bad golfer, so I know when one tops off his irons, meaning swings over the ball, it bounces as opposed to get under the ball, it goes straight up in the air, and he put the ball straight up.
Yeah, it was a perfect
kick.
How about
the Rams and the Cowboys Saturday, guys?
I mean, look, we're all excited about the next round, you know? I mean, every weekend is more exciting than the one before just because we get closer and closer to the ultimate prize. But great recap, Andrew. I'm glad you enjoyed your time on the couch. We'll look forward to talking to you again next Monday. You are on the NFL Network's Up to the Minute, of course. Don't miss that today on the NFL Network is where it is. Andrew, thanks for the time, sir. Hey, Mountain High is a thing, by the way, that based on all the rain we got in Southern California this weekend, is going to be in business well into the spring. And if you want to go for free on us, we can hook you up with a 4-pack of Lyft tickets to Mountain High at 9 a.m. this morning, then throughout the day at noon, 3 p.m., 6 p.m., and 9 p.m. You can also head to krock.com for another chance to win. Jensen, you saw a fascinating sports story that isn't really about sports at all.
No, but I'm a big basketball guy, and I'm a fan of diversion or just manipulation.
Sure.
Okay.
Things I like. And that story, this story has all of those things involved. It's a high school team in Missouri, and they're now under investigation after a videotape exposes them for cheating when it comes to their triplet teammates on the varsity team.
They're triplets?
Yes. So three dudes, high school students who look exactly alike, are all on the same team.
I wonder how likely that is to happen, by the way, that all three would be good enough to play on a team.
Oh, I thought you meant having even triplets, like, in sports in general. Do you guys know any twins or triplets that are good at the same thing?
The Hansen brothers.
No.
Well, that's not a real thing.
Oh, really?
No, that was a film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if they're any good.
Everybody should watch Slapshot.
Well, it seems that the coach was swapping out the identical brothers when it came to taking free throws, making sure that the family member with the highest percentage was always at the line.
All right, now that makes... That makes perfect sense if there weren't numbers on the backs of the jerseys.
But referees don't pay attention to the numbers of the fouled. No, they don't.
That's how they know what players they're looking at.
They call the foul on number whatever, and they say it to the bench.
That's okay. They called the foul on that person.
Right.
That's not the foul.
That's not who's shooting.
That's not who's shooting. So, like, for example, if you foul me.
Not notice that?
If you foul me, the referee will be like number 12.
Right.
But they won't look at my number. They just will be like, is it the same dude? Okay, it looks like the same guy.
Me and you?
No, but I go to the line.
Right, no, I hear you.
Yeah, they say. So the video that's in question is from a championship game for Dora High School against a high school that I think is poorly named, Licking High, where one boy, number 34, Austin Luna, gets fouled. And he falls to the floor, right? As he's walking to the free throw line, he's giving high fives to all his teammates. They do a little bit of a huddle, create a crowd, and it appears he switches places with one of the other triplets, number 20, Bryson Luna, who now is his replacement at the line.
I got to tell you, that's awesome.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, you ask yourself, they have different jerseys. They do. But the ref has already admitted. They've talked to the referees, and he says he really only looks at faces when it comes to those at the line.
I mean, I can see that. I can see that he pays attention to the number when calling the foul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then at the free throw line, it's just a dude.
No. I agree. That makes sense. Unless the referee knows that there are triplets in the game, in which case he has to pay better attention.
Well, now they'll be paying attention because they found out from the losers of the game, Licking High, my favorite high school in the nation. When they found that out, they were watching old videotape. They're like, want to see what we did wrong this time? And then they... Wait a minute. Look at that. It was like the JFK tapes.
Wow.
Yeah, they replayed it over and over. Let's add something to the conspiracy theory. If you're wondering what type of coach would do this type of thing, well, the coach is the triplet's father, Rick Luna.
Okay. Okay.
So,
oh, no.
Who would know better how to exploit boys than his own flesh
That's
and blood?
That's awesome.
Wow.
People are saying it happened twice during this game, but parents from opposing schools have apparently been complaining about it all season long. Rick Luna told the Ozark Sports Zone, which is a paper I'd love to be a reporter at, doing the high school beat, the swap wasn't planned, it's happened on accident, and he wanted to note that the players did only shoot one out of four during the free throws that are under question.
So how bad are the other two brothers?
Right? Yeah. Wow. No kidding.
But now the game is completely officially under review. So
what about the whole season? If other teams, like if they see this here, maybe the whole season is...
Well, they won the championship by 2 points.
Wow.
So even though 1 point seems to be the free throw, I mean, still, it changes the whole game as to who's in and out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you or did you not order a Licking High t-shirt?
Well, I'm looking into if my kid can enroll there from Los Angeles. Right. It's a bit of a commute to Missouri every morning, but I mean,
worth it.
It does give you the PE pants, you know?
All right. Here's what we want to do. I don't know that we've done this before. I don't know how many folks we're going to have out listening that have twins experience.
Yeah.
But there are a fair amount of identical twins in the audience, I'm sure. Have you ever swapped? Have you ever, you went someplace and they thought it was the other person or vice versa?
Or
and
teachers, like one of the people is really great at math and he sits in and takes the math test. They don't have numbers in the back of their jerseys for that.
No, they don't.
It would be pretty easy to do.
And even if you do have numbers on your jersey, you get away with it.
True.
Sophomore year of college, my brother was taking a psychology 101 class as a prerequisite. On one particular Tuesday, he approached me with a dilemma that he needed my help with. Thursday around noon, he had the psych exam, but the same morning, his girlfriend's family was flying out to California to go to Disneyland and they picked him up. Of course, I said, I'll go to Disneyland for you, but that wasn't what he had in mind. So he had to take the Psych 101 test for his twin brother so his twin brother could go to Disneyland.
Yeah.
And they got away with it, too, by the way. So that's what we're looking for. You have swapped out with a twin or a triplet or a quadruplet, whatever you got.
Or again, you were somehow involved in it. You were a teacher where they did it to you
and
or
it's,
whatever.
And it's not assault.
Yeah, that's important.
We're real on the line here.
So we want to hear stories of twin swapping at 1-800-520-1067. If you know anything about it, you were there, you were one of the twins. We'll talk to you next right after this on K-Rock.
Just had a blink 182. Let's take a call. Let's make it Jeanette in Los Angeles. Good morning, Jeanette.
Good morning. Good morning.
We are talking about twinning on the program today. People who are twins or triplets that swap places. You got some experience with that?
I sure do. I have identical triplet aunts. And when I was growing up with my cousins, my aunt had apparently been swapping places since high school. They one would go to English, one would go to PE, one would go to math, etc. Then as adults, they continued to do this with their own children. So my cousins would be at home and one aunt would say, I'm leaving, and the kids would never know, and the aunt would come in to babysit. And the kids would still say, hi, Mom. And the kids never knew it wasn't their mom.
Kids sound dumb.
very dark.
I wonder how, look, I don't know a lot about twins. Kevin, you have twins, but they're not identical.
Correct.
Would you be able to tell the difference between the two identical twins if that's what they were? You think
that's
so?
Why I said the kids were dumb, because I can't imagine. If you see your parent or aunt or whoever every day, of course. Of course you can tell.
Even if they're identical.
Yes, of course.
They're identical, yeah. And they even sound the same on the phone. So if, when they call, like for me, I don't know which aunt it is.
Well, I mean, that's different.
I have to really listen.
Right.
Yeah. That and they just love it. Do they just get the biggest kick out of being able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they figure it out at some point, but as little kids, they're dumb. They don't pay attention. They just think, oh, that looks like my mom. But yeah, they would do it all through. They were proud of it. But now as adults, one of them can barely speak English. They say, like, they're always saying double negatives, and they just don't sound very intelligent
like
now because they didn't take English.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, they did. It's got off on a weird tangent.
Nothing to do with twins.
All right, Jeanette, we're glad you called. We appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. 1-800-520-1067. We want to hear your twins swapping places story right after Blake on the Wolf Industry. Jensen brought us a story of a high school in Missouri that is in some trouble because there were three players on the team who were identical triplets. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that they were swapping them out based on who was better at free throws.
Sounds pretty smart.
It does sound pretty smart. And they would have got away with it, too, if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
Over at Licking.
So over at Licking High.
Yeah.
So we're taking your calls on twin swapping at 1-800-520-1067. We got some great calls. Please hang on. We'll get to as many as we can. But let's start with Roger, just because his story is almost identical. He was a twin trying to swap out during a basketball game.
Hey, Roger.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good. What happened, man?
So, my brother and I both played Division I college basketball, but in high school, he was an all-state player, and I was, average player, and during games where he would get into foul trouble, I would, if we were close to the same person that got fouled, I would try to spin around so it looked like I made the foul instead of him.
Did you
so he could stay in the game.
Did you put your hand up like, oh, that was me? To help did it
and
work?
And try to cause a little commotion so people wouldn't really, oh, was it him or was it the other guy? And we looked just alike, had burr haircuts, so it worked a few times, not every time.
I mean, that's smart, I got to tell you. And you, most of the time, would make that free throw?
We were both good free throw shooters, so it didn't really matter with the free throws, but it was more about who got the foul so he didn't foul out of the game so he could stay in.
Yeah.
He wasn't
the good one,
Bede. Shooter, and we wanted him in the game rather than me.
Gotcha. Wow, that's crazy, Roger. I never would have guessed that we would actually have a story so similar to the one we started with.
Roger played D1 basketball, so I think he should be our first draft pick in the Kevin and Bean basketball team.
Do we have that?
I think it should start today, and he's our first draft pick.
Now that we have Roger,
could take on
build the team around. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your listening. Let's go to Christopher. He's on line 8 up next, Los Angeles, here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, Christopher.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
Basically, my twin story was I had this friend, and he was going out with this twin. And sometimes he'd just be very dull, and it was kind of a pity date thing, right? So whenever the first girl didn't want to go out with my friend, she would swap out her twin for her, and she'd go out on the pity date for him or for her or with him for her.
Why?
Why would the other
just say no?
The other twin's like, no, you're not going to go out with her because she's dull, and you want me to?
I mean, he was the dull one, but I don't know. I kept asking both of them that, like, why do you guys, you know, do this ruse? And it's like, we just feel bad for him. Blah blah blah. Like, whatever. I mean, that's your guys' ruse.
Wow, that's crazy.
That is very weird. All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate it, Christopher. And I'm going to say something that I probably shouldn't
say,
because my father's not around to defend himself anymore. He had friends in high school that voluntarily swapped girlfriends on numerous occasions. And I think you know what I'm getting at.
Voluntarily?
Yeah.
So, like, that was, so they knew what they were doing?
They knew what they were doing, and they were like, look, you want to have my girlfriend tonight? That kind of deal.
Okay, they voluntarily did.
They voluntarily,
were the girlfriends in on it?
No.
Oh, so it's not voluntarily at all. That's
no, I'm saying the twins. Yeah. I'm saying the twins. I'm not. What I guess my distinction is that it's not like one twin went out with his brother's girlfriend without his brother knowing about it. It was their plan all along.
Right, but what about the girls knowing?
They can't have been happy.
That's an arrestable offense.
Oh, yeah, it does. It seems like it. I mean, I guess.
No, it doesn't seem. It is. Yeah.
Your instinct to not tell that story right. was right.
He goes, it was voluntary, though. It was fine. Voluntary on whose behalf? The twins. Oh, they knew about it. Okay.
Look, you couldn't get arrested for anything back then.
No.
You know?
Everything was safe.
I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying it was a cool thing to do. I'm just saying it happened. I'm just saying that the guys did it. and it was bad. All right. Let's go to Eddie, line 3, up next in Santa Ana on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, Eddie.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Talk about twins.
Hey, Eddie, don't incriminate yourself in any criminal law here.
I just got a note. They're exhuming my dad's body and they took him on trial.
No worries. So basically, I used to work at Disneyland a few years back. And so my twin brother, he would use my cast member ID to go to the park all the time. And he would get like 3 chimichangas, 3 sodas, 3 corn dogs from all my coworkers.
Nice.
That's awesome.
For about 3 years.
Yeah, that's a $30,000 value.
Wow. I am so jealous.
That's a great idea.
Awesome.
I got to get a twin for the free churros.
I don't think you understand how twins work. You can't just get a twin.
No. Well, even if he does, it's good.
106.7 K-Rock. It's KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:52.
One P.S. on our twin topic from listener Chris. I have twin daughters that are turning 21 this month in kindergarten. They swapped classes and it failed when the one daughter asked the teacher, hey, where does Hannah sit?
Oh.
I mean, not going to work out that way. All right. It's the morning after the 76th Annual Golden Globe Awards. They were last night on NBC. Allie is here to talk about that and other things on this Monday edition of What's Happening.
Yeah, a lot of winners. I'm not going to go through them all again. Let's just hit kind of the big ones. Best Drama, Bohemian Rhapsody. Best Musical or Comedy, Green Book, which was neither a musical nor a comedy. Best Actor in a Drama, Rami Malek. Best Actress in a Drama, Glenn Close, for her role in something...
The Wife.
Thank you. Called The Wife. Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, Olivia Colman. And Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy, Christian Bale. On the television side, The Americans won for Best Drama Series. And for Best Comedy Series, The Kaminsky Method.
Like, that's a real show.
Right? That's not a thing.
Right?
Too much TV.
And Sandra Oh won for Best Actress in a TV Drama for her role on Killing Eve, which is by far one of the best television shows in a really long time.
If you haven't seen Killing Eve, catch up on it.
You need to. It's wonderful. But she was also the co-host of the night. And It was an interesting, you know, intro with her and Andy Samberg trying out some different bits type of thing. One where they were going to be roasting the audience. Don't think they're going to go easy on people. But then when they roast them, it was just nice things, which went on for a long time.
I give them credit, though, because they really went all out.
Yeah.
And they tried stuff that was questionable whether it worked or not. And for people like that that really go all out and they're not sure they can pull it off, I give them a much wider berth. I liked it. I love it, but I liked it.
I agree with you 100%. And I also will say they are very likable people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You certainly root for them. You didn't feel like they were wasting your time or dicks.
Which goes a long way.
Yeah. Jensen and I were talking about it, how goodwill towards people goes a really long way. If they were unlikable people, you'd be like, oh, that's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, true.
But instead, you're like, hey, all right, you did it. Hey, you.
Also, like, everyone knows that's a terrible job.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it. But at the end of it all, Sandra Oh did kind of take a minute and kind of acknowledged what a huge deal this is for her.
I said yes to the fear of being on this stage tonight because I wanted to be here to look out into this audience and witness this moment of change. And I'm not fooling myself. I'm not fooling myself. Next year could be different. It probably will be. But right now, this moment is real. Trust me, it is real. Because I see you. And I see you. All these faces of change. And now, so will everyone else.
That was an awkward laugh.
Do you think the lady that laughed was like, oh, oops, that wasn't a joke?
Yes, I think so.
It was the most bizarre thing ever.
That was Harvey Weinstein.
Because the point she was making, at least the cameraman assumed the point she was making, was all of the Asian people who were in the audience and had been nominated. That's who they were showing while she was saying, I see you, I see you, I see you.
Mm-hmm.
But ticket holder did not get the memo that was a serious moment.
That ticket holder did not.
She remembered something funny from earlier.
Maybe. She finally got one of the jokes from before. Well, then we move on to Carol Burnett, who was getting the inaugural Television Lifetime Achievement Award.
How happy were you, Allie?
I love her. It was named after her, of course. And Steve Carell was doing the intro, and he was pretty funny.
It is my great honor to recognize the very first recipient of the Carol Burnett Award. And the nominees are Christian Bale, Charlize Theron, Antonio Banderas, and Carol Burnett. And the winner, you know what? I hate to root for one nominee over the others, but I really think that Carol Burnett should win this, and I will tell you why.
And then he went on to list just her incredible body of work and the number of nominations and wins and over the years that she's had and how beloved she is and the Mark Twain Prize and all this stuff. But he closed with this about her as a person.
She is funny and gracious and kind. She is without a doubt one of the most revered, respected, and well-liked people in show business. It's been said that she makes Tom Hanks
look like an asshole.
Which they cut out.
I didn't say it, but it has been said.
By Bean.
Amazing. So good.
She makes Tom Hanks look like an asshole is a great line.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph came out to give a couple awards away, and those two are magic together. They're amazing. I always loved Amy Poehler with Tina Fey.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tina Fey with Maya Rudolph. I love Maya Rudolph with Amy Poehler. It's like the trifecta of great, these women. But they had a little bit of fun with the first award.
Movie stars are the lifeblood of our industry.
But stars cannot do it alone, no matter how much we wish they could. Beautiful people have to have someone to talk to.
And without supporting actors, where would we get all of the famous lines from our favorite movies? Like, hey, wait up.
Or, I agree, partner.
Or, well put, Sergeant. Mm.
Or, those aren't my babies.
Or, you gotta take it easy, Joe.
I want to see all these movies.
Or that famous one. Hello? I'm sorry, he's not here right now. Can I take a message? Bye, bye, bye. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes, he'll be returning from Bermuda soon. All right, thank you. Goodbye.
So you could, dumb. You Nation host. That's your host.
They can, you can tell how talented they are because the timing is so perfect.
That's they should host.
That's your Oscars host.
They should host. I agree.
Well, didn't they ask Tina Fey and Amy Poehler for the Oscars? And they said
just ask Maya Rudolph. She's
just
so
ask Maya Rudolph. Yeah. Have her do it with Fred Armisen. For
no, thank you.
Not so much.
Listen,
that was not
they're good.
They're
good together.
Oh, I like Fred Armisen, but
that was painful.
That was painful.
I think she would be a tremendous host.
I agree.
I agree. That's so there were, you know what, Allie, thanks to this segment, I am reassessing what a disaster I thought the Golden Globes were. There were some entertaining moments.
Excellent.
Yeah, if it was an 8-minute show, it would have been great.
You have a couple of highlights that are about 2.5 minutes. It's very, very good.
I will say when Sandra Oh introduced the cast of one of my favorite shows on NBC that makes people, you know, cry a little bit, the show This Is Us, and she told everybody to get out their tissues. Do you have that clip? I believe you played it earlier.
I did play it earlier, and here it is.
So break out the tissues, because you're going to want to masturbate to all of them.
It was a total whiplash moment, and I laughed so hard at that.
That was a surprising note.
But that didn't get edited?
No.
Whoa.
It was amazing. And then you see Chrissy Metz from This Is Us go, well, thank you. Wow, I don't know if I've ever heard it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That was brilliant. All right, some birthdays for you. Katie Couric, Ella Black, Jeremy Renner, David Caruso. Lauren Cohan and Nicolas Cage.
What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes!
It never gets old.
Oscar winner, by the way. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Oscar winner, Nicolas Cage.
Yep. Hey, do you guys know if the Golden Globes are still going on?
The solution to the Golden Globes, I think, and this will be controversial, is to just have Jeff Bridges accept the award for everybody. Just keep sending him back up there. Whoever wins, just have him go up there and do the Bohemian Rhapsody speech. Have him go up there and do the Green Book speech. Just let him have it.
He does not lack for things to talk about.
No.
Yes.
That's for sure.
He is delightful.
One he is.
Guy, he had nothing to do with the movies, but he's taken a lot of direction from him. Okay. That's Bucky Fuller.
Oh, Bucky.
Oh.
And Bucky... you know, he's most famous for the geodesic dome, but he made a great observation.
Okay, now he's most famous for the geodesic dome.
Obviously.
Was he saying that for the 1% of the people in the audience who didn't know Bucky's complete resume?
They're handed it as they get in, his full resume,
What a bizarre guy to bring up. Let's see where he's going with it.
About these ocean-going tankers.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that the engineers were particularly challenged by how to turn this thing. You know, they got this big rudder. It took too much energy to turn the rudder to turn the ship.
Now, if you're just tuning in either to the show or to the TV last night thinking you were going to see Jeff Bridges getting the Cecil B. DeMille Award and talking about acting, you're in for a surprise. Because he's talking about how to steer a ship.
Sure was.
Imagine sitting next to him on an airplane.
Oh, he is yapping the whole time.
The whole time.
For sure.
Yeah.
So they came up with a brilliant idea. Let's put a little rudder on the big rudder. The little rudder will turn the big rudder. The big rudder will turn the ship. That little rudder is called a trim tab.
Okay. Learning a little something now. The trim tab. All right. And it was also weird that at the Oscars, when the orchestra plays you off, they aggressively play you off. They cut your mic and play you off.
Yeah,
I mean, they keep a very tight timetable over there on the Oscars. Do you see how many people waved off playoff music?
I waved them off from my house and it worked. It was insanity to me. Just have to move your arm like once or twice and they're like, oh, Shari for playing.
And they just let you go as long as you want. And I feel like that's a bad policy for people who are just up there reading lists of names. But I think I'll allow it with Jeff Bridges because I need to know where this trim tab story is going.
Absolutely.
And Bucky made the analogy that trim tab is an example of how the individual is connected to society and how we affect society.
He's still talking about acting or he's not talking about acting?
That was a long drive.
Sure.
It really was.
Oh, boy.
And I like to think of myself as a trim tab, and all of us are.
By the way, I'm so sick of that cliche in accepted speeches. I like to think of myself as a trim tab.
It's always thank you, Jesus. Thank you to my agent. If you're up, kids, go back to sleep. And then I see myself as a trim tab.
I mean, seriously, can stars not think for themselves anymore?
Trim tabs. We may seem like we're not up to the task, but we are, man. We're alive. We can make a difference.
Okay, all right. He's bringing it home.
We can turn this ship in the way we want to go, man.
Man, he is always the dude.
Yeah, he's turning more and more into the dude as he gets older too.
Now, here's my question: are people applauding now because they are
recognizing the dude?
Yeah, because they're getting, he does have a point, or that they just think he's wrapping up and maybe this long national nightmare will soon be over.
I think anybody that wanted that to end needs a soul.
Is no friend of yours?
Yes.
All right, so we can, we are the trim tab.
Towards love, creating a healthy planet for all of us.
Okay, bro.
So, I want to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press for tagging me. And I wanted to tag you all. You're all trim tabs. Boom. Tag, you're in.
I know that the Golden Globes has a reputation as being the show where the alcohol flows freely, and the later in the night you get, the more freewheeling the speeches are. But I don't think he was drunk at all.
No, he was Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It was just Jeff Bridges and up, right?
Yeah. Love it. I can't imagine a universe where people want the award shows to go longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
they're so long already, but if mm-hmm. it's just him rambling,
I'm fine
with it.
I think we all agree that he might be the exception to the rule on actors who hog the spot.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. This is the Kevin and Bean Show at 9:38.
What is up, people's butts?
I don't know, Allie. Why don't you tell us on what's happening here on the Kevin and Bean Show?
Well, that could be its own segment.
Yeah, I didn't know we were handling that right now.
I didn't know either. You guys, movies this weekend. The box office. Aquaman leading the box office again for the third week in a row, bringing in another $30.7 million. That brings the total up to $260 million. Not bad.
No.
Not bad at all. Followed by Escape Room, which did $18 million, which was more than they thought it would. Good for you. Mary Poppins Returns coming in at number three, followed by Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and Bumblebee rounding out the top five.
How'd you like seeing Dick Van Dyke on your TV last night at the Golden Globes, Allie?
I loved
it. Speaking of Mary Poppins.
I just think he's such a gift to humanity. He's such an adorable little man.
He's
Don't
like
you think?
93 or something.
I know.
Really well.
If you haven't seen the movie, he dances in it.
Yeah.
At 93.
And he's still really sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing great. He's a love bug. If I ever hear anything bad about that man, it is over. I'm just saying.
What's over? The person that tells you?
I will end them. He's just a lovely human being.
Well, anyone he might have ever molested is long dead, though, so at least we don't have to worry about that coming out.
You're on fire today.
Oh, my God.
Are you saying his taste was older or that?
No, I'm just saying he's outlived them all.
Oh, even
there's,
that.
There's nobody
that went
alive.
So fast!
Really, Tim?
Nobody alive today who's going to be able to shock us with a bad Dick Van Dyke story.
Good.
Because he's outlived them all.
Why do some people tune out?
All right. So now's the time where we start hearing about every single music festival around the country. Lineups start coming in, and now we know the 7th annual Bottle Rock Napa Valley lineup. It's occurring May 20... Occurring? Really? It's occurring.
Sure.
May 24th through the 26th. Would you like to know their lineup, you guys?
Sure.
Keep in mind... No? All right.
Yeah, sure.
Keep in mind, last year, they sold out pretty quickly. They had Bruno Mars, The Killers, Muse. They tend to have some great lineups
big,
up there.
Foo Fighters, did they?
Foo Fighters, they've had in the past,
ago.
Yeah. So, Friday, May 24th, Imagine Dragons, Logic, One Republic, Neon Trees, Lovely the Band, Jenny Lewis, Flogging Molly. Good lineup, right?
Yeah.
Saturday, Neil Young, Pharrell Williams, Gary Clark Jr., Juanes, Cypress Hill, Chevy Metal, Against Me. All right. Sunday, May 26th, Mumford & Sons. Well, finally, we have an L.A. date in Napa Valley. How dare you, Mumford & Sons. Very angry about that whole thing. But Mumford & Sons, Santana, the Crystal Method doing a silent disco. What? Bishop Briggs, Jeff Goldblum, and the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra. What?
Yeah,
I can't with that.
Don't need Sunday.
Yeah,
that's a real, like, Tommy Bahama day.
It really is.
You know what I mean?
Really is.
Wear your sandals and some shorts.
It's a eclectic mix, which it usually is. But three-day general admission passes go on sale at 10 a.m. today. Those three-day general admission passes going for $359 if you want to see all those bands. Jensen, help me out with this.
Mm-hmm.
WWE Raw.
Yeah.
They are bringing back Hulk Hogan tonight.
Yes. In the past, he's run into some issues regarding racial slurs.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, he will come back to tribute Mean Gene Okerlund.
Okay.
With no racial slurs, I'm hoping.
I hope not.
What would that sound like if we had somebody on the show that did an impression of the Hulkster?
Doing racial slurs?
No,
talk about the announcer.
Jeez.
I'm not even going to start.
It's best you don't make that request.
Okay. I didn't.
He didn't. He wanted.
Sounded like you did.
He wanted to hear what he would sound like giving a tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund.
Now that Mean Gene's dead, hopefully all the kids he molested won't even come out and start talking about it.
Dear God. What's happening?
Jensen, what is with you laughing?
That left out so fast!
Again.
What's going on?
No, you can't count on me. You can't.
That's my bad.
Yeah. So this will be the second time that he's been back, though, because he did the he was the host when they went to Saudi Arabia for the Crown Jewel event.
Untelevised. Yeah. He just did stuff for them, but didn't. It wasn't on the broadcast.
Oh. Is this a good idea?
No, this is a terrible idea.
At all, it's not good at all.
This is also a bad idea because the WWE, who's had an incredible run the last few months as far as stocks,
right.
I mean, they're like way up in the 70s at this point. They went to Saudi Arabia under huge controversy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
On top of that, never allowed any of the females to really participate in the event because of Saudi Arabian mm-hmm. beliefs. And now they're going to bring on someone who, you know, publicly was outed as being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, wrestling has never been the moral compass, so.
For sure. Yeah. But it's not like they need him right now. I mean, Monday Night Raw doesn't get the greatest of ratings.
Great cable ratings every single week, as far as not the greatest, but I mean, to have that kind of consistency for 20 years is unheard of, yeah.
Interesting.
And the Fox
choice.
Deal is worth, like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that's coming up, so.
Huh. Huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know that yesterday was the year's busiest online dating day? Every single year, it's the first Sunday of the new year. It's known as the year's busiest online dating day. Some call it Dating Sunday. Some call it Single Sunday. Were you aware of that?
No idea.
I wasn't. And why Sunday and not Friday?
Well, Sunday.
Weekend of the new year, people would think, oh, I'm going to, this is the year I'm going to meet someone.
Because they've been disappointed in the weekend.
Exactly. Sundays are always the busiest day of the week for online dating. Because people have had a crap weekend.
Yeah.
They're sitting there. They've got time to sit down and look at different profiles and whatnot. But a cyber dating expert said that it's the perfect trifecta. You have people recovering from a breakup who are down during the holidays. You have people, New Year's resolutions, I'm going to get out there more. I'm going to date more. And then she said you also have that clock ticking down to Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So people are like, I need to get on.
They're already thinking about Valentine's Day, so they're dating yesterday?
They're getting back into the dating scene. Yeah.
It's also cuddle weather.
And it's cuddle weather. That's the fourth.
Yeah. Everybody knows it's cuddle weather coming
sure.
up. I watch the news.
Well, that is a great point because you do want to be in a relationship when it's colder outside. A lot of people say that. And then right when it becomes, you know, sundress weather.
Get out of here.
That's when you say, beat it, kid.
God, I got to go to the beach.
Right. I need chicks in sundresses.
Yeah.
It's science, you guys.
I'm sure it's not new, but it was new to me. I saw an ad over the weekend about a dating app for people over 50.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
Fish in the Sea or something?
No, this was a different one. I'd never heard of this one before. But it was just like, hey you know, I'd love to have somebody in my life, but how am I going to meet somebody?
I mean, I think that's great for the olds, right?
Yeah.
I do too. I mean,
for the olds. Olds.com. I mean,
it is, if not the most, I think it's very close to the most popular way that people meet now, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously being introduced.
My mom met her fiance on Match.
Did she really?
Really?
Yeah, or something. Maybe I made that up. But they bet on the internet. I don't know what site.
Yeah.
J-Date?
No. He is not Jewish.
Oh.
Tinder. How do you allow that, Jensen?
Well, you know.
Did you just say Tinder for his mother?
I was just guessing.
Yeah. My mom's scrolling.
Just swiping.
It is called...
Farmers Only?
Our Time, it is called.
Our Time.
Our
and is
time.
It, you can't be under 50 to be on it?
That's right.
Oh, I think that's really interesting.
50 and up.
Yeah, but good luck getting them to download the app. I can't even get my mom to realize how to call me, text me.
And you know that it's all women, because all 50-plus men are like, I'm on it for the 20-year-olds.
The commercial is like, in order to download, call your kids.
No.
Just ask them to download it for you.
Can I download this on my jitterbug phone? Have you seen those phones? Big numbers. Oh my God, we're all going to be old someday. Let's stop making fun of the olds,
Kevin. I didn't think this could get any worse, but apparently it knows no bottom. Mm.
Oh. Is that one of the questions on the app? Do you know? Hey, some birthdays for you. What about David Caruso? Indeed. Katie Couric, Ella Black, Jeremy Renner, Lauren Cohen, and Nicolas Cage.
All right. Okay, baby girl. Who sent ya?
Again, Academy Award winner.
What is that from?
The movie is called Deadfall. You guys know Deadfall?
No. Nick Cage does movies for money in like India at this point. Like you can book him. Just be a rich guy. He'll do your movie. Mm-hmm. All other countries, he's in tons of them, and he just screams.
He is fascinating, though, isn't he?
He really is.
Yeah, he's a strange dude.
Yeah.
And by the way, wasn't he, am I wrong, or was he married to Lisa Marie Presley at one point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's had like a wacky life, too.
Yeah, the wackiest. He named his son after Superman.
He did.
Kal-El, his son, right?
Kal-El. Did you put that on your list?
Kal-El?
Uh-huh.
No, Nick Cage is on it.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, Nick Cage Cart.
That would be the greatest, Jensen, if you named your son Nick Cage.
My Superman.
Oh, God. Oh, that's what's happening.
Thanks, Ellie, to drive home from tomorrow morning. Lamorne Morris from New Girl.
Wednesday. Back.
Nice.
We also have TV shows we may not know about. We learned last night watching the Golden Globes that there are a lot of TV shows that can't possibly exist.
Mm-mm.
But they seem to, and they seem to have fans, and so we're going to take your calls. And also, Bean, we think, sent some money to a Nigerian prince to help him get out of prison, whatever that.
I do believe I was taken for a ride.
Wow.
I do think so. I think I got hooked, guys.